He's Jim Browdy.
And she's Marjorie Egan.
And this is Boston Public Radio.
89.7 WGBH, WGBH HD1 Boston.
Online at WGBHnews.org.
Boston's local NPR. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. In the spirit of Halloween, a health insurance website designed for people to do comparison shopping is dressing up as healthcare.gov. So will the uninsured in search of subsidies get tricked? And ALS has an ice bucket challenge, as you know. Hunger got the Bob Geldof and Bono treatment. So is it time for Ebola to get its celebrity-studded fundraiser? Joining us online for his take on these and other medical ethical issues is Art Kaplan, artist head of the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU's Langone Medical Center. And he also co-hosts the Everyday Ethics podcast. Hello, Art.
How are you?
Excellent.
And boo.
And to you as well.
Yeah. Well, before we get to the boo and the star-studded Ebola concert, et cetera, we know from your terrific columns here, Art, that you think Ebola quarantines are a bad idea. There's been a big brouhaha this week over this nurse that was kept in an unheated tent after she came back from treating Ebola patients in Africa. I'm going to play a clip for you of her. She's on Good Morning America, Casey Hickox, saying she's going to take legal action to avoid a home quarantine in Maine. Here she is.
I remain really concerned by these mandatory quarantine policies from aid workers. I think we're just only adding to stigmatization that, again, is not based on science or evidence. And if these restrictions are not removed from the state of Maine by tomorrow morning, Thursday morning, I will go to court to attain my freedom.
So what do you think, Art? Is she right?
She's absolutely right. Quarantine is not necessary in the war against Ebola. It is very, very intrusive and probably unenforceable. If Casey Hickox decides to wander out of her house tomorrow, it's not clear what Governor Page and various Maine authorities will do. Are they going to shoot her, taser her, have a cop in a moon suit tackle her? What's going to happen to her if she says, I'm not staying here? They haven't even thought through. I'm looking forward to the court case where she has a right to be there, so I assume everybody there will be in a moon suit as they have the proceedings.
That's a great point.
I suspect what people aren't understanding is this. How many people, I'll give a quiz to you two, how many people right now in the U.S. have Ebola?
Well, there's Dr. Spencer.
There's one that I'm aware of. How many?
And he's it.
Oh, he is it. Okay.
I got it right.
So there's one.
Thank you.
Despite people meandering around, wandering around, even Dr. Spencer with his, you know, I went bowling and I rode the subway and ate in restaurants and stuff, the exact number of people with Ebola is one, which tells you, you can control this disease with self-reporting. When you get symptoms, you got to call the health department. You probably don't have to restrict liberty of anybody who's not showing symptoms because they're not infectious. People keep saying to me, how do you know? Maybe they are. We know because we've had 40 years of Ebola in Africa. Don't know how to treat it in terms of a cure. Don't know how to prevent it in terms of a vaccine. But we know how to get it. And you really need to have close contact with bodily fluids to get it. It's tough to catch. And that's why there's one person in the U.S. with Ebola and no people out in the streets who have Ebola.
And Art Kaplan, from everything I've read, even if Jim had Ebola right across from me here in the studio, he'd have to be...
That would be the least of your worries.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Okay. But he'd have to be actively sick. He'd have to be, I don't want to get into all the bodily fluids, but you get my drift. And that it seems as though the people who are most likely to catch it are the people that have been dealing with the dead bodies and with the actively sick patients who have been exhibiting all these symptoms really sick.
Yeah, but before you answer that, in defense of the Chris Christies of the world, the Andrew Cuomos, now Daniel Malloy from Connecticut, those are the people they want to quarantine, the people you just described, the people who've come in contact with Ebola patients in West
Africa.
But I'm saying
it's ridiculous because those people that have come in contact are not actively sick at that moment, right? I mean, that's when you catch the disease.
Some have been actively sick. Let me give you a little scenario about why quarantine really gets completely stupid. So we have Craig Spencer, and he's actually in the hospital that we run, Bellevue, NYU's hospital here. So he does have symptoms, and people are dealing with him. They're in suits. He's in isolation. Everybody's very careful. They're well-trained. However, according to Governor Cuomo, I guess all of them should be in 21-day quarantine pretty soon because they're dealing with an active Ebola patient, right? Yesterday, Amber Vincent got released at Emory University. She was cared for, looking at the press conference, by about 30 doctors and nurses. She did have active Ebola. Are we quarantining the people who are taking care of Ebola patients? Well, clearly we're not, because we need all those people. They're the best trained people we've got. So the quarantine idea, not only is it a bad one, it's dangerous, because if you really literally applied it to people who care for the few people who've had Ebola, you'd have to quarantine them all.
You know, it seems I read a lot of your postings, but it seems your basic theme is the only thing we have to fear is fear of Ebola, not Ebola. It's, I don't know if you read Andy Borowitz, one of the great satirists of all time.
Yes, they do, yes.
2 days ago, his headline was, "Poll: Majority of Americans favor quarantining Wolf Blitzer." and the notion being that CNN is helping to spread the fear deal. But you have exactly, you do a 180. You say, rather than quarantining, what we should be doing is sort of celebrating these heroes, give them hotels, raise money, do concerts, do whatever. Make the case for both those things, Art Kaplan.
So if you want to really, because of panic or fear or just a failure to believe scientific evidence that people aren't going to get you sick, why don't we make it attractive to people to stay in their home or to stay in a particular location? I think these people are heroes who go to West Africa, Spencer and Hickox and these people. They face hellish circumstances when they're there, not just Ebola, but dire poverty and all kinds of other illnesses and sicknesses around. The governments in those places are falling apart. So when they come back, why don't we give them some R&R? Why don't we treat them like heroes and say, hey, you know, we're going to pay your wages when you come back, 3-week vacation, stay in a nice place, order what you want from any food place that you want, and we'll get it to you, and you can have all the videos and CDs and music or Lord only knows podcasts of this show to listen to. And you know, let's treat them like heroes. Say everybody gets a free R&R vacation. And by the way, let's put on a big rock concert fundraiser to help both pay for these folks and get them wonderful benefits and honor them. Where is that big rock
concert?
That
is a great question.
But you posed it, but you don't answer it. You raise it in one of your blogs. What is the answer to the question, do you think, Art Kaplan?
I think people are still creeped out by the disease, the Hollywood folks, people who might put this kind of an event together. Ebola is a frightening thing. It's not necessarily good to, it may be okay to nuzzle up to it when somebody is not infectious and just wandering around, but it's not, I think, such great PR to nuzzle up to it right now because of the fear of it. So maybe that's what's inhibiting them. But in all honesty, I don't know. I mean, it is time to kind of celebrate the heroes and, you know, where's Bruce and Mick and everybody to go up there and inspire us and raise some money and then maybe you could even create a special hotel for heroes. You know, last time I looked, there was plenty of empty space in Atlantic City where Chris Christie is. If he wants to quarantine people, quarantine them in the old Borgata Hotel or whatever. I forget. Maybe said that. There was some luxury hotel. Trump.
Well, they can
Trump's
stay.
Hotel.
I was just going to say, one of your favorite people, Donald Trump. You know, you use the word fear, but there's also lack of knowledge. We had Jonathan Gruber in here last week. Well, actually, he was here yesterday for another reason. Jonathan Gruber, the MIT guy who was a key advisor to both Mitt Romney and Barack Obama on their health care plans. And we were talking about this Kaiser Foundation survey, I'm sure you've seen it, that says that virtually nobody, 11% of the uninsured who have to be signing up come November 15th for round two, for the three-month window, only 11% even know that the sign-up period is about to begin. He's much more optimistic, I have to say, than I am, having read this stuff. Where are you on the spectrum of whether or not everybody's going to get their act together in the next 3 months and 2 weeks?
I'm with you. There's going to be a 2-week push with hordes of people coming forward to sign up. I don't see it. I think that's not what's in the news. We get a lot of election news, Ebola news. A young woman, Brittany Maynard, has announced that she's going to take her own life. I think soon, probably November 1st or 2nd or something, is part of assisted suicide, which will set up a whole debate. I can't see the message getting out to people to sign up, which does raise the question, Why don't we just automatically enroll them?
Well, in
how do you,
in a default plan?
Yeah.
What do you do?
Yeah, basically opt out of it if you don't want it. But everybody's in until you get out.
Wow. I mean,
and if you said to me, how do you do that? I don't know, but that's why you have that other guest come. I mean,
speaking art of the other guests, one of the things that Jonathan Gruber did say, which I found kind of discouraging, is that you really have to set aside like 3 or 4 hours to sit down in front of your computer and go through Obamacare and go through these plans and figure out which one works for you. And, you know, that, I mean, for a lot of people, that's a huge mountain to climb.
Yeah, it reminds me of the same problem comes up a little bit for Medicare, right? Everybody's got to look at their different plans and you're sort of overwhelmed with information you don't really understand. But I'll say it again. We could automatically default people into one simple, cheapest plan and say, if you don't want that, you got to opt out, take something else. The point was to get people coverage. So why are we, if it looks like 11% are going to get it and we're ready to bring in a lot more folks, then what's the problem with saying, you know, good news, here's a letter in the mail, you're enrolled in cheapo plan A, you have 30 days to get out of that and pick something else or pay a little more or whatever. It seems to me the default is wrong, as the social scientists like to say. Put them in and then let them move out if they don't. And there may be people, for whatever reasons, who don't want to be in it at all. But put the burden on the opt-out crowd.
Well, the only argument against it is they will obviously impeach the president immediately if they do
that.
I have to say, whether that idea has as much merit as you think or not, I haven't even heard it. And it seems to me to be such an obvious, at least, topic of conversation.
I think the politics of that Big Brother is.
You don't
is
think the president could
you?
Do it by as if he's not in enough trouble already for executive action?
Maybe he'd have
you're
to do
right,
it in your
though.
Second
you're
term.
Right.
But I mean, can you imagine this is like they're forcing you? They're coming into your home.
No, that's a fine point.
But you know, there is a little bit of encouraging news. This New York Times thing was looking at the percentage of uninsured people reduced by 25%. You know, that's something, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something. It's good. I mean, I just say, why don't we do better? If you think, as I do, that healthcare is important, particularly for families with kids in them and so on, then let's try to make sure everybody's in, whatever way works, rather than relying on individual behavior and choice to kind of guide you through the maze. I think, let's put it this way. You're more likely to read the stuff if somebody calls you and says,
you're
we're
in.
From the government. We signed you up for this.
That's true. Well, maybe it's an executive action, Jim. I don't know. They might have to ride him out of town on a rail. I don't know if he could get away with this, even in the couple of last years of his last term.
You know, Art, I don't know if you've – every time I feel like this great sense of civic responsibility that you got to write the White House, no matter who's – you go to whitehouse.something and you write a letter. And occasionally, if you – instead of going to the right one – I think it's whitehouse.gov, I'm sure.
By the way, did they fix that? It used to be a porn site.
That's what I'm about to say. If you go to the – it's either whitehouse.com or .org is a porn site. Well, a variation on that theme, healthcare.gov, as we know, is the
Obamacare.
Affordable Care Act thing. I didn't know till last night. Healthcare.com is a – which I would assume is where most people or at least a ton of people would go, is this profit-making sort of consumer reports gives you options. But not only is a lot wrong, they don't tell you about the subsidies. How do they deal with this nightmare?
I don't know. You know, it's similar to if you want to get your driver's license renewed or stuff, there's commercial companies out there.
Yes.
But they don't clearly identify themselves, and they kind of charge you for what's supposed to be free because you can do it on the right site. So there's clearly some need here for the Federal Trade Commission or state consumer authorities to kind of get on board here and sort this thing out. It's basically – you know, kind of a bait and switch where you're hitting the what you think is the government site, and then there's a company cloaked behind it. It's wrong. It's just bad. But it's around, as I said, as you guys apparently know too, for the driver's license, social security documents. There's all kinds of other trolls out there who are kind of ripping people off for things that they should be getting for free because their taxes paying for it.
And by the way, if you haven't ever experienced what Art's talking about, if you go to the if you don't go in Massachusetts to the Registry of Motor Vehicles, but go to a close sight. If you type something into Google, the graphics on it look almost exactly like the graphics on the official site. I mean, they are clearly consciously trying to confuse you. In that case, though, the worst that happens is you pay a few extra bucks for something that is either free or at least affordable. The problem with this healthcare.com site is you could leave with the impression that you've signed up for the best plan or any plan at all, or didn't even know you're entitled. What is it, 85% or 90% got subsidies in year one?
Yes.
You may not even get the subsidy, which is one of the only things that allows low and moderate income people to afford this thing.
You got to love the free market.
Okay. We're talking Art Kaplan from NYU, medical ethicist extraordinaire.
So Art Kaplan, Halloween, of course, is this Friday. We all know at the same time that our little children have big time problems with obesity in the United States. This time, New York Times piece the other day about little kids showing early signs of heart disease, which is really depressing.
Don't go here with me. Don't go down this road.
Why is that?
I got to go.
Why?
I got to go. I got to go. We want to know about getting a Halloween candy, Art.
I know you do.
Are we unethical?
I know where you're going.
Are we unethical to give out Snickers and Reese's or Reese's, whatever you call them? What do you call them?
Anybody who hands out a toothbrush on Halloween should be put in an Ebola unit.
Okay. I knew you wouldn't disappoint me, Art, on that one. So no sliced apples, no toothbrushes, no dental floss.
When I wandered the streets of Framingham with my tattered pillowcase and somebody gave me an apple, I did my best to try and throw it through the window of the house. See, one day a year, you can go bonkers. That's the point of Halloween. You should get enough sugar into you that you need some resuscitation from a diabetic coma. You should fight with your siblings about who's got the best candy. You should wallow in it. I don't care if your mother or father comes the next day and says, okay, that's it. You can't keep this stash around for 3 months because it's not good for you. But that one day, I think, should be bacchanalian. I think it's a good day for kids, although adults keep trying to nuzzle their way into
they
this holiday by turning it into a dating event or some kind of sketchy romance holiday. But it should be a great day for kids. I don't think we should worry about health. I think helicopter parents should land. I think that candy for all.
Well, what about this as a compromise? Because I had no idea that was going to be your position, even though I'm proud of you, Art Kaplan. How about this? Is that prior to you getting, or let's say as a condition of you getting a stash of candy from your neighbor, they have something like a treadmill set up outside their house, and you got to do 2 minutes before you get the Snickers. What, is that a good compromise?
I'm going to tell you something. I had a guy when I was trick-or-treating in Framingham many, many years ago. He used to give out packs of cigarettes.
No!
Oh, my God!
Now, I'm not advocating that. I'm not advocating that. Even, I would say, you know, candy cigarettes. No.
Oh, I remember the candies.
They're still making those. But, you know, we can cut people slack. There is such a thing as enjoyment. We don't have to tell them about obesity every day. And if you want to get the obesity message across, which I'm all for, then, as I said, give it the next day. We just say, you know, we got to round up the candy now, and now we're going to take it down and trade it in for the toothbrush, and holiday's over, and that was a lot of fun, but we're through here. So I think you can give them their day and let them have a lot of fun and not have any hectoring from ethicists or doctors.
Okay.
Public radio.
Or do-gooders or whatever.
I knew you'd be with me. Jim wants to give out the slices of apples. I'm glad you were on my side on this one.
Or a little tofu or something.
A little tofu. Yeah,
exactly.
That's good.
Somebody was giving out brownies with kale. It was
yeah, exactly. So, all right, what's going on today on the Everyday Ethics Podcast?
I think we're going to take a look at this Brittany Maynard situation, physician-assisted suicide, back in the news because this young girl basically has shifted the focus of the debate. I don't think she's added any new issues to, say, what was debated in Massachusetts, pro and con, when it got defeated there narrowly. But she's bringing in a new audience because she's only 29, a newlywed, has a terrible brain tumor. But younger people are paying attention to this, so the optics of the debate are shifting.
Okay, Art Kaplan, thank you as always.
Happy
for calling
Halloween,
in.
Art.
Happy Halloween.
Enjoy
your
candy.
See you guys at the candy bag. We can swap.
Okay. Yes, you will. We'll be sorting.
Art Kaplan is the head of the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU's Langone Medical Center, and he co-hosts the Everyday Ethics Podcast.
Thanks, Art.
Up next, gentrification and how it affects the gay bar scene, and evangelicals, are they taking a second look at homosexual or, as they call it, or most of the rest of us call it, gay marriage? We're going to talk about that with Sue O'Connell up next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.